Hey, it's Tony Bruschi. When you're not listening to this podcast, be sure to check out one of our others, like this one, The Grave Talks. Every week, I talk with individuals who've been affected quite intimately and personally by the supernatural. We hear their stories one-on-one in our conversations. In fact, here's a 15-minute preview of one of this week's two new episodes of The Grave Talks. And if you like it, just search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts and press subscribe. Today on The Grave Talks, Evil in the Object, a conversation with Eric Vitale. We've all heard the story. Someone goes to an antique store, buys an item that truly speaks to them, and slowly strange things begin happening around their home. Surprise! You bought a haunted object. The world's most famous collection of haunted objects resides in a small building in New England, property once owned by Ed and Lorraine Warren. The famed Annabelle doll, many other relics of real-life horror, all trapped behind its walls, and the binding prayers that are sent there. Today, we take a deep dive into some of those objects from the museum and beyond, and some of the places they came from, as we have a conversation with Eric Vitale of the New England Society for Paranormal Research.
Well, we had a young kid reach out to us. He emailed us through Nesper. He contacted the team. Mm-hmm. Chris Galloran reached out to me. He said, "Eric, you're really good with the religious stuff. Could you please help this kid? He's got a haunted item. Tell him what to do." Sure, no problem. So I reached out to him, and he explained to me that he got this item from an antique store, which doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
And he soon realized strange things were occurring in the house. He was hearing weird noises. The mood just changed. And there was strange sounds happening during the night, and he was scared and he didn't know what to do. So I basically had to walk him through this entire process of how to get rid of it, which is something I've been telling people for many, many years, especially something like a Ouija board. But this was just like a little toy item. Mm-hmm. And it started like pieces would fall off it and stuff like that when no one was near it. So I wanted to calm him down, first of all, because I didn't know what the kid was dealing with, because you know, if it's something of a malevolent nature, if it's something demonic, if this kid's scared, mm-hmm. all that energy is being pushed into the atmosphere, and then this thing's gonna feed off that and get stronger. So I didn't want this kid to be scared at all. I told him right away, "I'm gonna help you. We're gonna figure this out. Just let me help you."
Mm-hmm.
So I had him bring the item. First, I asked him if there was somewhere isolate, like, you know, deep in the woods, something like that, somewhere where no one would ever find the object again. And I told him to bring that item out to this destination, dig a hole. I gave him proper prayers as well. And I had him put the item in the hole, sprinkle holy water, had him go to his local parish and get holy water, bury the item, and then say more prayers. I gave him proper binding prayers.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, "Now, when you're done doing this, you can't, don't even think about it anymore. Just, you need to really be done with it. It takes more than just burying it and saying some prayers. Don't even think about it anymore. Give no more energy to what this thing just happened, to what this just did to you and your loved ones. Just forget about it." And I never heard back from the kid. After he did that, he said, "Thanks. Nothing's ever happened." He mm-hmm. followed up once, and then he never reached out to me again.
What was going on with the object specifically? Like, why did he contact you that he was that concerned?
He was hearing voices in the house. He was hearing weird noises, mood changes, which was something that was really scaring him. Like, people were just not themselves mm-hmm. anymore. And I remember him saying something along the lines of pieces of the item were, like, just mysteriously, like, ending up in other places in the house when mm-hmm. no one was home.
And this was a game board, is that correct?
It was like a little, he didn't even send me a picture of it. It was like a little tchotchke.
Okay.
Like a little, like a statue or something.
Okay. Haunted Candyland or something is what I was running through my mind.
It was just a little figurine type thing. But, you know, stuff like this happens all the time. People buy stuff from, you know, they go to like antique stores and they don't know what they're buying.
That's an interesting thing.
Nothing crazy, but you know, I had to help the kid out.
I mean, I love wandering through antique stores. It's one of those, if I have a hobby outside of this, and this is kind of career now, it would be wandering around antique stores. I don't necessarily buy a ton of stuff. It has to be like, oh, this is really going to fit a room or a setting or something I'm kind of going for. There's very few things that I see in an antique store. I'm like, I'm drawn to it and I have to get it if I have no reason. I don't really get that. But I've always thought about that. And that's something I've talked about on the air here over the years with many people. I've had people on who run haunted antique stores. What's your feelings on that? I mean, is there inherent risk, you know, when you go to an antique store getting something? Can you get something from an antique store? And other than burying it and essentially kind of blessing it, get it something to get away from the object? The whole overall thing on objects that one would just find. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, hey, if that's something you're into, I mean, I'm very interested by it all. I've got some objects in my house that I probably shouldn't have, but I know how to protect myself.
Yeah.
You know, that goes right back to Ed and Lorraine Warren. They brought all that stuff back to their home. The occult museum is literally a small building that's connected to their home. Mm-hmm. And they would constantly do binding prayers in there to contain the entities within these objects, contain the evil that's attached to these things. So I think if you know how to protect yourself, you know, that's on you if you want to take some of these objects and kind of collect them, if you will.
Is it a foolproof thing? I mean, or is it a 100% thing that binding prayers or whatever rituals may be done or asking for protection will protect you from the objects that are brought into one's home?
I believe so. But, I mean, there's always that what if.
Yeah.
You know, we still get some activity at the occult museum.
Yeah.
You know, we investigated there about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
You remember I sent you the voice that came out of the ghost box I was using. Yeah. It said Annabelle. Well, what the hell said Annabelle at 3 o'clock in the morning while I'm standing in front of the doll?
And the odds of that picking that word are also like, what?
But, you know, my faith is most important.
Yeah.
And I know God is more powerful than any devil or demon. So even if these binding prayers don't always work, I truly believe God's going to protect me. And I pray to Saint Michael every day.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a risk you take with this work.
Sure. Sure. It's always fascinated me. I mean, the fact that, Ed and Lorraine put that museum together. And I mean, that says that they felt confident enough because they knew the backstory in every single item. They witnessed it in many cases. So, but they felt confident enough to say, we're going to put this in our outbuilding here and absolutely, we're not going to worry about it.
And what's really great, you know, Ed, I mean, for lack of a better term, Ed was just such a badass. I mean, the stories I've heard about this guy, I mean, he was amazing. I mean, truly amazing. Just to get off topic for a quick moment.
No, go ahead.
Very important case. The Devil in Connecticut.
Yeah.
Conjuring 3 was based on it.
Yep.
You know, The Devil Made Me Do It. Conjuring 3. So back in, I want to say it was 1981, when David Glatzel was having an exorcism performed on him in a church. Ed Warren, the badass that he is, was back home in his office doing a binding ritual, trying to get the demonic to come back to him so he could bind it so that it wouldn't harm David anymore. But what Ed didn't know is that they weren't dealing with one demon in that case. It was a legion. And Ed actually saw 42 demons appear in a kaleidoscope effect. And he knew that it was too powerful for him. So Ed wasn't just out there trying to get evidence. I mean, he was he was armed with like the armor of God, this guy. And it's just so great to be able to go out and honor what they do and still help people. I still pinch myself sometimes when I go out on cases and it's like, oh man, I'm with Rick Clark and Jim Pettinino. These guys were investigating haunted houses with Ed and Lorraine 30 years ago when I was, you know, a teenager.
Yeah. Yeah. When you really, you're just like kind of looking at the books at the library about it. Like,
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's very fascinating. In fact, that's an interesting case, and it's one I don't know that we've really talked about much on this show. So I wouldn't mind going down that rabbit hole a little bit. I know a lot of the story, but in case the audience doesn't, you can probably spell it out a little bit better than I can. Give the audience a little bit of background on that case and what exactly went down from the start and how things kind of progressed.
Let me try and jog my memory. I want to say it started early 80s, 81. Mm-hmm. David Glatzel started seeing this entity that he would call the Beast. Mm-hmm. And I believe this case started because his mother and his sister went on a ski trip, if I remember correctly. And they made friends with some people that were kind of dabbling with the occult. And, young David started seeing this entity and it would really scare him. And they noticed it, at a home that they were moving into. And then it would follow him to the house in Brookfield. And before long, they got Ed and Lorraine Warren involved. And it was a series of investigations going on at that home. And, I remember Ed was falling up the steps when he came inside. And then David said something along the lines of, oh, the Beast tripped you when you were coming in. And just like weird, creepy things like that started happening. Mm-hmm. But what really escalated was when Arnie Johnson got really upset that he was seeing this happen. Mm-hmm. Arnie Johnson was dating Debbie, who was David's sister. Mm-hmm. He basically told this thing, you know, come into me.
Yeah.
Leave my friend alone. Come into me. And that's when, you know, the demonic isn't going to just sit. It's not just going to do what you tell it to do. It got at him when he was at his most vulnerable. And that's when, unfortunately, it resulted in the death of a man.
And I mean, how did Arnie die? What exactly was what happened?
Arnie's there? Alive.
Or not Arnie.
Arnie's still alive.
Yeah, but who's the one who died?
He killed his landlord.
Yeah, he killed his landlord.
Yeah, like that now.
Yep.
I've become quite good friends with Arnie over the years.
Because Arnie is out now, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. He only served a few years.
Yeah, yeah.
They let him off on good behavior because they didn't charge him with murder. They charged him with manslaughter.
Yeah.
But he stabbed him. And when he came to, you know, he was possessed.
Yeah.
And then when he came to, he just didn't remember anything.
Yeah.
He didn't remember a damn thing.
Yeah.
And you would never think that, you know, this guy would do something like that. He's just such a nice guy. I'm going to see him. I'm actually going to a barbecue with him on Saturday.
Yeah.
At Ed and Lorraine Warren's house. He's a really nice guy. And he's been coming out a lot more recently and telling his story, which is great, doing events. He's going to be at the Warren Seekers of the Supernatural on October 29th at the Mohegan Sun. But yeah, that's a really important case for Ed and Lorraine Warren because that was the first time ever where they, you know, they said, you know, the devil made this guy do this.
They tried to argue it in
under
court.
Demonic possession.
Yeah.
They did argue in court.
Yeah. Yeah. And the court ended up saying they weren't going to accept that. But in the end, the sentencing really kind of reflected almost like they did kind of accept it in a way.
Yeah, because I forget what the sentence was, but I think he only served like 5 or 3 years.
Which, if it was, that wouldn't be a normal sentence for a crime like that.
Exactly. I mean, you know, he stabbed a guy.
Yeah.
He killed someone.
Yeah. That is such a fascinating case. I recently saw him on something. And I thought I'd really like to talk to him. I would be very interested to hear his story just in his words.
I can put you in contact with him. You probably saw the Shock Doc on Travel Channel.
That's what it was. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's where I saw it.
That was done very well.
Yeah. That was indeed where I saw it. I remember that. But yeah, it's such a fascinating case of how that all went down with the objects that are in the museum. And you know, you still obviously get some activity there. Is it the binding that keeps them there? Like if an object was to get out of there, if somebody were to, not that they're going to, but somebody just were to take something, does that release all the binding that's been done on it? Or are these objects now essentially neutralized?
Well, I'll tell you this. There's been some activity in the Warren's home. And it's coming from the museum. It's coming from the museum, 100%. I mean, I think it doesn't matter how many prayers you do, eventually there's going to be some leakage, if you will. About a month ago, I remember I was standing in the living room. I was on the phone with my wife telling her it was going to be a late night. There was a crew there. We were doing some filming. And I heard this kind of gargling old man sound coming from the basement. And I looked over to Wade, great guy. He's at the house quite often. He's pretty much watching the house because Tony and Judy still own the house. So Wade spends a lot of time there. And I said, you know, I heard that voice that you were telling me about. And he's like, oh, yes, there's definitely something in the basement. We think there's something demonic in the basement at the Warren's house. And where did that come from?
Yeah.
The museum. There's a passageway from the museum that links right to the house.
Do you think it's leaked out more and more over the years? I mean, obviously, Lorraine wasn't in the greatest health for many years at the end of her life, and had passed quite some time ago. Was it a kind of a situation where, you know, the individuals who kept everything at bay because they lived there day in and day out, you know, they got old and they weren't necessarily able to do the protections that they had been doing when they were in good health and alive. Is that some of that, you know, now it's there's someone taking care of the property and this and that, but it's not the, you know, this is my home, I'm living in it, and I'm, you know, there's a difference in terms of, I think, the level of what one could do.
Yes, but what I truly think, and I think a lot of people are going to agree with me on this.
Hope you enjoyed this 15-minute preview of one of this week's two brand new episodes of The Grave Talks. To hear the rest and get new episodes every Monday and Tuesday right in your podcast feed, search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts and press subscribe or visit thegravetalks.com.